How many Emilios have there been, Emilio? There was the one who at the age of 20 was already publishing in the Politecnico of Elio Vittorini. The one who danced boogie-woogie at Santa Tecla with Rosalina Archinto. The one who advised or reassured Giorgio Armani about his creations. The one who sang Neapolitan songs with Dario Fo while playing the guitar. The one who did the covers for the recordings of Ricky Gianco or the source of inspiration for Mariuccia Mandelli. The one who wrote for the Corriere della Sera or talked about art on television. The poet, the painter, the storyteller. How many lives did you live, Emilio? No matter how many. You lived them all in your father's house. Something more than a house, an entire world. A building from the start of the century, one of the first built with reinforced concrete in Milan on Via Iommelli. A street, when you were a kid, practically outside the city, though not yet in the country, in the heart of a neighborhood of workshops and factories. Milan, in its explicit productive essence. You lived on the first floor, and your studio was downstairs, by way of a spiral staircase. Going up and down those steps, you could hear the noise of the presses, the machinery of the print shop where your father Giuseppe worked. Marucelli Tipografia is still written on the facade, imprinted in the decorative cement over the entrance. Maybe this is why you wear so many things, Emilio. You were fascinated by writing, attracted by composition. As a typographer, an artisan who put things in order, gave form to words. Lambrate was your neighborhood, Via Porpora your kingdom. There, near the house, on the corner with Via Ampere, you went to the movies, as you recall in your novel La Lunga Notte. I entered the cavern of the giants as a child, you wrote. At the corner of Via Porpora and Via Ampere, the planet gave birth to heroes, giants. Your painting was also this, imaginative, childlike, visual and dreamy magic. Painting done well, we should point out. As a painter, you knew how to use your hands. Like the printers who set the type and pulled the levers behind the wall of your studio. Like the tanners and makers of leather goods across from your house. Stefano Serapian was the name of the best of that lot. He had opened a workshop right across the street, the first in Milan to craft leather items of such refinement. He was of Armenian origin, and all he had to do was cross the road right next to your place to attend mass in the church of the diasporic community. The first Serapian shop is still there, facing the print shop that continued for years to impress ink on paper, even after the death of your father, thanks to your brother Gianni. You went around the neighborhood by bicycle. Sometimes the topography of Milan makes history. Lucio Fontana lived on Via Porpora, behind your house. It was inevitable that you would meet and spend time together. Once, in Fontana's studio, you admired a large oval canvas he had just finished, one of his very famous spatial concepts. Te piace? Lucio asked. Chapelle su. Do you like it? Take it home. And you replied, I can't. I've got my bike. Giorgio Marconi, on the other hand, lived on Via Teodosio, which was also close by. You were already a poet, but your paintings were still unknown. He was the first to include you in 1965 in a group show, together with Mario Schifano, Valerio Adami and Lucio Del Pezzo, at his new gallery, which wasn't called a gallery. There were two men in Milan, old Sironi had advised him, but a studio, Studio Marconi. On Via Tadino, just past Loreto, 10 minutes by bike for you. Marconi was the son of a framer. He filed away his medical degree and switched from selling frames to selling what was inside them. Very often, unknown masterpieces, as when your dear friend Enrico Bai recommended that he purchase the works of a certain Man Ray that made Marconi the gallerist par excellence. You had a degree in letters, but above all, you hung around with the artists in Brera. At Bar Jamaica, of course, many of those callow youths over the years became recognized talents. It was enough to be there, where everybody was, drinking glasses of white wine, putting them on your tab in the little booklet of Elio Mainini. Like that time, still in the 50s, when you were talking with Ugo Mulas, who thought of himself as a poet, as you did, and Pietrino Bianchi passed by and asked him if he wanted to take some photographs for his weekly magazine. Mulas didn't even have a camera. He had to borrow one. That is how talents blossomed in Milan. By chance. You just had to be there, swapping ideas, each one believing in the gifts of the next. They've called you a realist, a metaphysical, a surrealist, an informal. You are just curious to observe the reality beyond reality. You are looking for your total realism in forms, in words. Umberto Eco, your friend and companion in Group 63, said you were a writer who paints, a painter who writes. You are constantly drawing, even when you were talking. Writing for you was a way of relaxing. You went to your chalet in Valsesia with the family, and you wrote. Just 1 month to complete La Lunga Notte. It took the infinite patience of Antonia, your lifelong muse and wife, with her ability to organize your creative magma to manage your volcanic existence, Emilio. You were a cultured man. You devoured entire strata of European literature, as Bertelli said. Yet, you could talk about art and literature with anyone, in newspapers, on television. You never refused. "I don't know how to say no," you once confessed to Lina Sotis. "No to the young painter who asks for advice, to the writer who asks for help, to the friend who calls me at the last minute." How many Emilias were there, Emilio? To each his own, but everyone remembers your multi-pocket trousers. It was as if you wanted to fill them with all the affections that surrounded you. A thought for each, a thoughtful gesture. Even more than writing or painting, maybe what interested you was weaving friendships. Enjoying them sincerely, without ulterior motives or calculations. Quips came easily, like contagious laughter. You never failed to take part in high jinks or horseplay. Like the time you, Alec Cavaliere, and other barrel scrapers at Jamaica, organized an amazing practical joke. It was 1953, and the world's most famous artist, Pablo Picasso, was coming to the city to personally supervise the hanging of a retrospective of his work. You all admired him. You all wanted to go to see Guernica on display at the Sala delle Cariatidi. What you might not have liked was the overwrought worship, that rather provincial bragging and adulation in the air. So it was easy, from one glass of white wine to the next, to come out with a plan that would lay bare the arrogance of the pack. Not unlike the attitude derided by the comedian Walter Chiari in the sketch on the Sarchiapone, the imaginary animal. You dressed up the janitor of the Brera Academy as an artist, disguised as Picasso, and organized a turnout to celebrate his arrival at the central station. You escorted the imposter to the Teatro Filodrammatici, cheered by a thrilled audience, and there were plenty of unwitting dupes. Politicians, art dealers, critics. That was your surreal Dada side. Like a kid that had never grown up, never been tainted by the fatal grimness of the adult world. When you were 20, you enjoyed playing on the big terrace at your house with a small circle of friends, doing bicycle races. The game had been invented by Guido Crepax when he was barely a teenager. You drew images of the most famous bicycle races of the day on cardboard, mounted on pedestals. Then you moved the pieces, rolling dice. for hours and hours. You continued with these games over the years at your house or his house on Via de Amicis, also building little cardboard rings on which to move boxes. At the house in Valsesia with Mino Ceretti, your children, and those of Alike Cavaliere, you invented and shot epic little Super 8 films. The director was Gianfranco Pardi. You were not interested in power, in the conventicles of artists. I stick with the monks and hold a garden, you once told Flavio Caroli. You are a humanist in the classic sense of the term. Your life was made of things to do, things to imagine, friendships to nurture, not petty ambitions. After all, you were well aware of the fact that existence is this mixture of the tragic and the comic, a dreamscape we cross like puppets, marionettes brought to life only by a smile. It required the right physique to have all these lives, Emilio. You had it. Even that particular careless way of dressing was your ironic way of toning down your natural elegance. You had a sculptured face, a toned body. Maybe this was another reason why the illness that afflicted you seemed even more malignant, even crueler in your case. You were weakened and tired, but you continued to work for your Milan. In the hospital, a few months before the end, you were still a member of the Monuments Commission of City Hall, and you had found time to examine the project for a sculpture by Fausto Melotti to be placed at Piazzale Lodi. Your friends, and you really had many, which is your true masterpiece, creating friendship, came to see you at home, in the hospital. And though you were debilitated and tired, you were the one to reassure them. You didn't want to see sad faces, tears. It wasn't necessary. I have done everything, you told them. I've had everything. In the end, I can call it a day. You had managed to get free of all the constructs people make about existence, you told your visitors. In this way, the definitive secession didn't seem so dramatic after all. When you've done what you wanted to do in life, then, in the end... How many Emilias were there, Emilio? They all went with you when you left. Some people still look for them on the streets of Lambrate, and on certain nights, when there is a full moon, it is still possible to glimpse them, dancing on the rooftops.